This week, on Myths and Legends, we're back in the stories of the Monkey King, with the journey to the West. We'll meet the nicest kidnappers ever, and see how, when a valley the locals warn reeks of poop stands in your way, you probably want to stop for lunch before you take that on. The creature this time is why you should maybe wait to break up with your water nymph significant other. You know, until you're not under the sea in the Arctic Ocean. This is Myths and Legends, episode 366, Roadblock. This is a podcast where we tell stories from mythology and folklore. Some are incredibly popular stories you might think you know, but with surprising origins. Others are tales that might be new to you, but are definitely worth a listen. In the story of the Journey to the West, we follow Xuanzang, the human monk, who is tasked with retrieving the holy scriptures from the Thunderclap Temple in the Western Heaven. Since the road is impossibly long and dangerous, he was granted four guards for his trip. They are essentially monsters on a redemption arc. There was Sun Wukong, the Monkey King, a superpowered monkey. There's also Pigsy, a stinky, appetite-driven pigman. And Sandy, a dour indigo sandman. There's also their horse, Yulong, which is actually a dragon, but who almost never leaves the form of a horse. As a quick note, I'm going to reference adventures we're not going to talk about. For the people who are somehow keeping up with the story, you didn't miss anything. We're just not going to talk about every fight. But I'll try to summarize them as we go. Case in point, the group did just win a big fight. And Monkey, well, Monkey has a massive new fan club. Wow, what an adventure, Pigsy said. The rest of them were sitting around the fire, just trying to have breakfast. Pigsy kept going. Monkey was surely an amazing creature, saving the dragon-subduing monastery by rescuing their agaric plant. After two tricksters, Busy Bubble and Bubble Busy, who told them about Nineheads, the fearsome dragon, had defiled the temple, causing it to rain blood. They defeated Ninehead, saved the temple, refused any monetary compensation because they're monks who renounced the world and also Master was watching, and now they're just rambling on. Monkey sighed. Why did Pigsy have to spark notes the last adventure? They could have gotten a whole episode out of that. Maybe two. We're better than that. It was too samey. Sandy, the indigo sand monster man, said before scooping up some beach sand he had saved and integrating it into himself. Monkey shrugged. Fair enough. Our master has integrity, one voice shouted from the forest behind them. Another said, he would never repeat a story. And the third said, the covenant a storyteller has with their audience demands authenticity and respect. The crowd assembled in stadium seating behind Monkey, then broke into their murmurings about how Monkey was so cool. His adventures were fun, but also didactic. They were the monks at the previous monastery that the group had saved, and they were now Monkey's disciples who followed them on their adventures. Monkey took a deep breath. All right, he was done. He plucked some hairs from his side and blew them away on the wind. When they landed, they were tigers. As the tiger swiped and bit at the monks who had followed from the recently renamed Dragon Subduing Monastery, Monkey corrected them. A herd of tigers! Monkey's new disciples screeched. Tigers weren't herd animals. Thank you, Master, for the lesson! A voice trailed off from far down the path. Monkey turned back to his breakfast and his own master. He had no idea how his master did it. Well, he did. Xuanzang's disciples were them, not annoying buffoons who didn't know what they were getting themselves into. Xuanzang only smiled. They traveled on through the cool of the spring until they arrived at their first obstacle in a long, long time that wasn't a secret demon. Brambles, Monkey said, looking up at the vines and thorns that towered over all of them. This was an actual problem. They were thick and strong. They would be uncomfortable for Monkey and fatal for Pigsy mastering Yulong, the dragon horse. They were 100 miles thick and stretching on for at least 1,000 miles in both directions. Pigsy grinned. We can use my do not say rake again. Monkey shut Pigsy down. Pigsy was lowering his rake. It was a rake. It would take longer than Monkey just smacking it with his rod. No, they needed other solutions. We could burn it? Sandy shrugged, but Pigsy shut that one down. When they found him, he was a farmer, and he knew that you only burned vegetation in the fall when it dried out. Right now, it would just smoke a bunch and take forever. Please, guys, let him try. Monkey knew that sometimes the only solution was to let Pigsy reckon with his own incompetence, so they could all get on with their day, and Pigsy started making a sign with his hands. Lines started glowing in the air as he contorted his hooves to make one symbol, then another. Where did Pigsy pick that up? Pigsy hesitated. You, all right? I learned it by watching you, he cried as he grew more than 100 feet tall, his rake with him. Monkey said he wasn't sure where that defensiveness was coming from. He was legitimately happy for Pigsy, and they should all learn from each other. Even with the confusion brought about by an allusion to a PSA from the 80s, Pigsy's transformation made all the difference. Several hundreds of miles of brambles that stretched 1,000 miles in either direction were obviously supernatural. So, for the next few hours, they were all business, with Xuanzong staying atop Yulong, the horse, and the four of them following under the giant hog for over 800 miles. Their walks stretching through the afternoon, evening, night, and into the next day, before they saw anything other than tangles of brambles. Collapsing on the other side, they looked up and saw a shrine sitting on a cliff, the creeper vines going up the side. Seems peaceful enough, Sandy said. Too peaceful, Monkey gestured. Listen. The rest cocked their heads. Listen to what? Exactly. There weren't any birds or animals stirring in the forest. This was an evil place. The wind blew, and the door to the temple swung open, revealing an old man shuffling out with a platter of steamed cakes. He's probably a demon, Monkey said, to some accompanying head nods. The old man's companion followed him from the shrine, a being with a red beard, scarlet body, a green face, and two tusks jutting out from his mouth. Okay, he's definitely a demon. Monkey plucked his rod from behind his ear, and the others nodded even more vigorously. It's not that I want them to deceive me, I don't. Most of the time we see right through it, Monkey said. It is nice when they put in the effort, though. Hi, friend, Monkey waved. He appreciated the cakes. Don't mind if I do. Pigsy started climbing the hill to get some of those delicious cakes. Monkey slapped him. I'm the local spirit here, and for 800 miles, there's no human house in my region. You know, because of the brambles, the old man said. And I'm the local demon, but once again, no humans to mess with and or eat, so we're friends, the local demon said. Sorry, I don't believe you, and frankly, it's just easier for me to kill you and let the cosmic consequences sort everything out than to wait for you to kidnap my master when I look away for a minute. The rod grew in Monkey's paw. He was thankful for their understanding. It would all be over soon, and by it, he meant their lives. The old man was first, or he would have been, if he didn't turn into a gust of cold wind, fling Monkey right through him, and swoop to take Xuanzong. Monkey grumbled and took to the sky, but they were gone. Both the old man and their master. Monkey scoured the sky. That was impossible. There was no way the old man, wind though he may be, could possibly be that fast. Monkey called up a cloud and zipped 100 miles in one direction, 100 miles in another, but he couldn't see his master or the wind monster anywhere. And the demon was gone too. What was going on? We'll see what happened to Xuanzong, but that will be right after this. Thank you. old mountain spirit wasn't fast, and he seemed to know it, at least to Xuanzong. The pair wasn't a mile away from Monkey and the rest of the party, but the old man huddled in the forest with Xuanzong by his side, watching Monkey frantically search the sky. I had a coin trick I learned about 10 years ago, and I'll say, if you ever need to take something away from a toddler, learn even rudimentary close-up magic. Because if you don't want your infant or toddler choking on that hard candy that they found at grandma's, if you take it and make it disappear, you don't necessarily have a tantrum, you have confusion and amazement. But it's all about the misdirection. You keep them looking at the left hand while the right does the hiding. The old man took Xuanzong into the sky in the direction of a mountain, because that's what all the kidnappers do. He actually immediately melted back into the forest. One favor, Xuanzong said to the old man as they began to walk. Can I not be naked? Can you steam me in my clothes? It's been a while since we've done laundry, and it would just be easier for everyone. Why would you be naked? The old man narrowed his eyes. Xuanzong said, well, they were going to cook him, of course. And why would we cook you? The old man asked. Xuanzong rolled his eyes. One of those kidnappings. All right, he wasn't going to get naked at all. They'd have to strip him themselves. Hope they liked kicks. Xuanzong was a monk, so he wouldn't directly hit them, but he would kick the air, and if they got in the way, well, that was on them. The old man stopped before a wall of leaves. Okay, they needed to clear something up. Well, two things. One, that was a Simpsons joke from the 90s, be more original. And two, no one was going to eat him or cook him or anything. Xuanzong sighed. Ugh, so the seduction started. The old man grimaced again. What? No, ew. What is even going on that journey of yours? No. A hand found a branch in front of them, and the old man parted the leaves to reveal a classroom in which four old men sat, knees on the ground. We want to learn from you, the old man said. You said there was no household in this region. Xuanzong studied his new students. The old man said he had not lied. These four were something of wanderers among the brambles. They stopped here for a moment when the mountain spirit got word that Xuanzong, the Tang monk, would be traveling through. The four men bowed low, and Xuanzong could see that they were different. One's beard was tinged with green, something Xuanzong actually recognized. When you meditate for a long time in nature, you forget yourself and become one with the world around you. Nature, too, begins to accept and claim you. The old man's beard had tinges of green in it, as well as the other's skin. One was just shimmering white. Xuanzong bowed, and the four men gasped. The Tang monk said he could see self-cultivation when it was before his eyes. These men were hundreds of years old. The four men looked to each other with a smile and told Xuanzong to please rise. He was right. They had been alive for centuries. What can I possibly teach you? Xuanzong still wouldn't look at them. The three laughed. They had been cultivating themselves, but he, Xuanzong, was special. From the moment of his birth, he had followed the Buddha's teachings. He was the golden cicada. They knew they couldn't grasp the fullness of wisdom he possessed, but even the rudimentary beginnings would be more than they could ever learn from any teacher this side of the heavens. This time, they bowed to Xuanzong. Xuanzong was, well, he was flattered. He had pupils. Monkey, Pigsy, Sandy, the horse that never came to class in dress code. Out of all of those, Sandy was the most serious, because the indigo sand monster never seemed to smile anyway. None of them, though, appreciated what they had. That's how, an hour later, Xuanzong was pacing in front of the four pupils, several times his age, going over the principles of the Journey of the West's particular flavor of Buddhism. He then outlined the secrets of Chan Buddhism, to the delight of the pupils. We're assured that they were great and super helpful, but not really given any details as to what the ultimate truths of the cosmos really are. Thanks, Journey to the West. Xuanzong, though, was fulfilled in a way that hadn't happened on the journey so far. Here were students that appreciated him, who valued his expertise and opinions and experience, and didn't spend the whole time laughing about bodily functions, like Pigsy, begrudgingly taking notes, like Monkey, or being a horse, like Yulong. They gestured deeper into the forest, where, down the path a bit, Xuanzang could see a glowing shrine. Shrine of the Sylvan Immortals, Xuanzang read inscribed above the door. Cool. He walked inside and was face to face with a demon. The demon he had seen back on the road with Sun Wukong and the others. Xuanzang rolled his eyes and started taking off his clothes. The students stopped him. Please, please stop doing that. No, he was a good demon. Kind of. He was learning from them just like Sun Wukong was learning from the famed Tang monk. The demon waved, "Hi, please put your clothes back on." Xuanzang eyed their hot liquid with no small degree of suspicion. It turned out to be tea. The food they gave him turned out to not be people, but a vegetarian feast. The demon was way better behaved than his own monsters. All in all, as far as kidnappings went, this had to be the best, top five at least. After dinner, the four pupils brought him outside to look at the moon, and they all sang songs, which sounds like kind of an awkward and tedious way to spend an evening, and to me, like something out of the Lord of the Rings, and not the good parts of Lord of the Rings. Still, Xuanzang enjoyed it, and after a whole trip of either waiting to die at the hands of so many monsters who wanted to eat him, or kind of wanting to die, wrangling the good monsters that seemed to only want to annoy him, Xuanzang was, well, he was happy. And then, a voice. But not an evil voice, not a growl, but a sweet, soft, sonorous one. A woman, singing from the forest. The four men turned to the trees, with Xuanzang lagging behind. Apricot! A young woman named Apricot, about Xuanzang's age, smiled as she parted the leaves. She lived in the area, and knew it was the day that the illustrious Tang monk would arrive. She made his heart beat faster as she bowed down, and then took his hand. She said, something, he was sure, but he couldn't tell you what. He was lost in her eyes. She took a seat, and he, too, settled onto the ground, not taking his eyes off her. She smiled and looked away, blushing. Xuanzang, feeling his embarrassment and many feelings, did the same. She had her servants, and they brought tea. Knowing that she should wait until the following day, she couldn't help herself when she heard the rest of them singing their wonderful, not tiresome and weird poetry. "Sing for us, Apricot, please," one of the students cried out. Another begged her. Apricot waved her hands. No, no, she wasn't as good as them. Untalented, incompetent. They wouldn't hear it, though, and they kept encouraging her. Once again, Xuanzang knew that she sang words, but just hearing her song made his heart so full of joy. He felt like he could stay there forever because, well, he was already in paradise. Something about her made him feel complete. Then another visitor to the glen tromped through the trees. Xuanzang turned and cocked his head. Pigsy? Pigsy beamed in the lantern light. Big brother! Big brother, I found him! Pigsy said, calling to Monkey, and then looked at Apricot. Oh, how you doing? He looked to the four pupils and then... Demon! In the weeks and months that followed, as long as Pigsy told the story, he would say he knew it was his time to rescue his master. At the perfect moment, having followed the singing in the night, and rake out, he wouldn't let them harm Xuanzang. Xuanzang could see Pigsy rush in and swing his rake around with his eyes closed. He almost got Xuanzang, which was not welcome. Pigsy didn't see, but Xuanzang did. He saw the rake hit Apricot. He saw her fall to the ground. Xuanzang dove to catch her as Pigsy attacked the demon, who turned to smoke and escape before the rake hit him. The four students were not so fast. The next instant, Monkey and Sandy were in the glen, and why was their master cradling a small apricot tree in his arms? Xuanzang said that Apricot, what was going on here? Xuanzang explained the evening to Monkey, who thought about it for a bit, and then laughed. Tree spirits. Tree spirits who had been alive long enough to gain sentience. That's how they had been around for 1,000 years. And, his master, I appreciate nature, okay? Xuanzang barked. Monkey shrugged. Well, sorry for this next part then. All right, dig them all up and kill them. Monkey commanded Pigsy, who saluted and started tearing at the ground with his rake. Pigsy started uprooting the students first, who were now grand trees in their own right. What? Xuanzang blurted out, but they didn't do anything. Xuanzang looked down at the apricot tree, the one with blood coming out of it, according to one version. They would have. It was only a matter of time, Monkey said. They were already on their way. They kidnapped the Tang monk, which, even though it was to, like, audit his class, it was still kidnapping the Tang monk. Another 500 years and they would be just like any other demon, not given the right instruction. Xuanzang looked, again, to the apricot on the ground. Yeah, well, it would be difficult to teach them, right? The Tang monk was probably the only one who could manage it, and even he started to appreciate nature a little bit too much. Xuanzang said he would never. Then you're okay if Pigsy digs them all up and leaves them to die? Monkey asked. Xuanzang said of course he was. Pigsy pulled them all from the ground, one by one, and Xuanzang watched. When he came to the apricot tree, Xuanzang remembered that he needed to go get something from the horse and didn't need to stick around and watch that one. He must have gotten up in the night to wash his face, because, unaccountably, it was really wet when he awoke in the morning. The travelers raided the abandoned shrine on the hillside and continued on their journey to the west. We'll catch up with the gang on the next stage of the journey, but that will, once again, be right after this. Don't be fooled, travelers, the voice called out. Fresh off another adventure where Monkey couldn't beat an unbeatable monster, but then figured out how to beat an unbeatable monster and beat the unbeatable monster, the group, having walked for a month, saw the sign for the Little Western Heaven. This is not the Western Heaven, they heard as they looked around at a couple of houses and a wide spot in the road. Yeah, that seemed fairly obvious. One contained the sought-after scriptures and the end of their quest. The other was, well, this. It was like confusing London, Ohio, or Paris, Texas for the real thing. It's just not going to happen. It was, however, the best they were going to get. The way is shut. The old man yelling at them muttered ominously. The group turned to look at him. It was made by those who are persimmons, and persimmons keep it. The way is shut, the man whispered. I'm sorry, what? Monkey turned. The old man gestured. Up ahead, pulpy persimmon alley. There was no way around it. It was a path full of persimmons. In spring they fell, in summer they rotted, and come autumn, it smelled so bad that the locals called it Slimy Alley. Monkey held up his paws. Whoa, whoa, whoa. The old man said that is in one of the most famous translations of the text. Monkey said he understood, but it's kind of a family podcast. It's not for kids, but kids do listen, so let's keep that kind of talk to a minimum. He also said that they had dealt with a lot more. They'd slain monsters, brought down kings. He and his buds were actual monsters. A few persimmons blocking the way weren't so bad. Monkey didn't see the look wash over the man's face as he heard that line. Then he asked, would they like to come over for dinner? A sumptuous vegetarian feast? The group looked at each other. Yeah, sure. With the first bites of rice and veg, he had them. Binding contract, the old man rose and pointed. Binding contract. What are you even talking about? Monkey was confused. The old man rose and cued the lights, the slideshow slides, and the distribution of the orientation packets that had seen a suspicious amount of use. There's a monster stalking this region, the old man paced the room. 3 years ago, a terrible wind came down from the mountains, and everyone who could run inside did. When they emerged, only splatters in the dirt remained of those who hadn't run inside. He swallows people whole, and the region, which used to be thousands of households, is now down to just a few hundred. and it's Monkey's job to stop him. No, it's not, Monkey rose. The man was incensed. What? Monkey was some great monster fighter, but he was running away. He took their food, their payment. Now he was doing this? Monkey said, okay. Payment? They wanted to talk payment? There were what, 500 houses in the region? Every one of them could spare an ounce of silver. That's just over 31 pounds of silver, which in 2024 is worth roughly $12,000. That is more than enough to get a good exorcist to come to their region. Good day. We already did that, the man said. I said good day. Monkey started, then looked to him. They did what? Yeah, twice, the old man said. The first time it was a monk like that one. He pointed to Xuanzang. They had found the man with his head looking like a rotten watermelon. The group grimaced, but they were impressed by his description. Worse, they had to pay for his funeral costs and his disciple. The second one was a Taoist they later found in the river. His family is suing, so that's fun. Both of them cost about 12K each, plus a funeral and legal expenses, so yeah. When he heard about the group's prowess, he just thought that they might find it in their hearts to save the people, and Monkey waved a paw, please. The sad eyes weren't going to work on him. But they work on me, Xuanzang said. He ordered this group to save the village. He would stay and eat, and hopefully not die. Monkey rolled his eyes. Okay. The elders were waiting in the other room, and they were elated that Monkey was seeing to the task, but, more importantly, wanted to get consent and clarification that Monkey, his friends, family, or dependents would not hold them liable for injury, disability, or death. Monkey groaned, yes. He had chopped off his own head on this trip, so he would be fine. And the reward, of course, the elders said. Monkey swallowed hard and said, quote, gold dazzles your eyes, silver is not shiny, copper pennies are stinky, to Xuanzang's nod of approval. Exhaling, Monkey said that they were monks and thus more interested in accumulating merit, not treasure. The elders offered them land on which to build a temple, 2 acres from everyone in the region, totaling 1,000 acres, but Monkey actually laughed at that one. The gold was tempting, but land was a slog. They'd have to care for horses for whom they'd have to make hay. They'd have to maintain and defend the land. That wasn't a reward, but a prison sentence. A little bit of tea and rice would be enough. The elders, congratulating themselves on their cheap, cheap hero, lost their smiles when the wind howled. Speak of the devil, well, not devil, wind, well, not wind, snake poop monster. Monkey shook his head and stretched out his arms to hold down the 4 corners of the house. Outside, trees, boulders, and tigers tumbled by. Pigsy dug a hole in the floor and hid in it. Sandy, who was in maybe the most danger, seeped into cracks in the dirt. Then the wind stopped. It was night. Monkey said it was mid-morning. That wasn't how daylight worked. He and Pigsy ventured to the window, where, in the darkness of the night sky, the moon glowed blood red. They walked outside and saw, well, not just one moon, but 2. There weren't 2 moons last night, Monkey observed. Pigsy smiled for the perfect setup. That's no moons, he mumbled. Monkey turned. Really, we're better than that. Pigsy held up a hoof. 1, no, we are not. And 2, they're really not moons. They're eyes. The monster was so big it blocked the sun. They were things that looked like moons but weren't moons. It was the perfect time to use that quote. Monkey sighed. They would put a pin in this and talk about it later. He told Pigsy to, well, be ready to run. Monkey's rod grew. He readied himself and leapt into the sky. Monkey disappeared into the murk and darkness, but only for a moment. There was a pop in the sky, the moons went out, and the sun returned. One punch, Monkey fluttered down to the earth. Go, 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 he cried, and the pair began their run. So, what do we do now? Pigsy said. They had arrived at the hole. The monster, the snake that could touch the heavens and the ground at the same time, had slithered underground to hide. To finish this and keep going, they had to kill it, but paws and hooves gripping the tail, they couldn't get it to budge. Monkey sighed. Okay. He had another idea. He told Pigsy to sit down and wait, and sitting being Pigsy's specialty, the hog happily obliged. Monkey disappeared into the hole with the snake, and Pigsy sat for a few moments longer, but then the ground rumbled. The snake slithered out. It loomed in the sky above. Pigsy gripped his rake. Something terrible had obviously happened to older brother Monkey. "Pigsy! Pigsy, he ate me, Pigsy! Pigsy, it's all on you now!" The hog heard deep from within the snake monster that, once again, rose up to the heights of heaven. This time, though, Monkey was gone, and Pigsy was alone. This would be the fight of his life. "Nah, I'm just joking," Monkey said from inside the snake. The snake's mouth opened to reveal a snake-shaped monkey smiling out of the mouth. Pigsy was so confused and a little disgusted. Monkey explained that he let himself be eaten. Then, once inside, he just expanded to the size of the snake and pop! Bones broken, organs ruptured. The thing died instantly. Monkey should really write this down because it was a super efficient way of killing mindless monsters that eat you. It was a complete mess in here, though. Pigsy nodded, cool. Then Monkey giggled. Did Pigsy want Monkey to turn the snake into a bridge? Pigsy grimaced a bit. He said, sure. Kind of specific, but oh, there it is. Like a snake skin stretched over a bridge. "Boat!" Monkey called out, and the snake was a boat. It was all fun and games until the rod burst through the snake's spine, and Monkey nearly flooded a small village in gore. About that time, Monkey decided that he should end his very tasteful little show and get back. "One week later," Pigsy said as they marched from the village. You don't need to say that. We all just lived the last week feasting with the village. "We know it's 1 week later," Monkey sighed, and then looked to the road ahead. The one packed to the brim, ground to treetops with persimmons. "Oh, yeah, that's right. Set up camp," Pigsy said, looking ahead. Monkey said that they just left camp. They needed to get on the road. Pigsy said that in the fight against the snake monster, he was ashamed that he couldn't do more than sit, even though sitting was what he was best at. He loved sitting. Now, he was going to do what he was second best at. He tied a bib around his neck and started doing his Doctor Strange symbols with his hands. Huge hog transformation. He ran headlong for the persimmons. Monkey was pretty sure that Pigsy didn't transform at all, but he wasn't going to tell the hog. They settled into camp. The following morning, from miles into pulpy Persimmon Alley, they heard, "Side dishes! I need side dishes! NT!" Monkey, seeing that this might actually work, but with Pigsy eating the persimmons that littered the path and scooping the poop-smelling persimmons and flinging them far off with his rake, made for town. A few hours later, there was, well, you know how during a flood or something, there's a line of people moving sandbags and stuff? It was like that, but with side dishes for Pigsy. Eventually, Pigsy did his part, opening up the mountain pass by eating everything in their path. Pigsy, full for once and really proud of himself for having flexed his strengths in this leg of the trip, you know, gardening, sitting, and eating, opened up the passageway so the people could finally travel west. Well, until the spring, when the persimmons fell again. The group would have to find another way around Pulpy Persimmon Alley on the way back, though, because even though Pigsy would probably be hungry again in about 20 minutes, it would be a long, long time before he would eat another persimmon. That's where we're going to leave the group. Next week, it's a story from Ireland, where a monk gives up being a monk and just decides to be a writer. And to mixed results. His insult poetry gets him whipped and slated for execution, but his short stories about Bacon Lad might save all of Ireland. If you'd like to support the show, there's still a membership thing on the site. For less than the price of a Shrock throw pillow, a pillow with The Rock as Shrek in a actually fairly convincing, if not extremely off-putting Photoshop job, you can get extra episodes and ad-free versions of the show, whose eyes won't follow you across the room. check out mythpodcast.com/membership for more info on the membership. The creature this week is Rusalki from Slavic folklore. The Rusalki are water nymphs, and like the siren from Greek myth, they'll sing to attract men into the water. Unlike the siren, though, that song is not to sadistically watch men waste away and die, but to be with them. And there's no downside to this. When they choose you, you can live underwater with them for as long as you want. One guy, named Ivan, surprise, was a seal hunter, and hearing dancing inside his hut, opened the door to see nothing. It was empty. This happened two more times because it's a fairy tale, and so the man decided not to leave, but instead hid behind a curtain. When he looked out and saw the Ruslaka dancing in his hut, he was really into her. I'll pause a beat and describe the beauty of the Ruslaki. They look like normal people, but with translucent skin and tails. Also, they can shapeshift into water creatures. Not sure which one of those checked Ivan's boxes, but to say that he threw caution to the wind would imply that he was trying to stay alive at all. He dove into the frigid water of the Arctic Circle, and, honored that this cute seal hunter would sacrifice his life for her, the Ruslaka gave him the ability to live. He could withstand the cold and the lack of air, and they did live together for a long, long time. The thing about the ocean, though, is that, well, I feel like it's a lot like land. There are areas of astounding natural beauty, but there's also, like, Ohio. And once you get not very far down at all, the ocean starts to desaturate. So it's really bleak, gray nothingness. I even got tired of living in a cold, desaturated world that looked like an uncleaned fish tank, and he said he wanted to go back home. There's the adult way to go about doing this. Have a reasonable talk with your spouse about your needs, wants, and goals, and reach an understanding. Or, if you know a way to make yourself repellent to them, you could just do that. Ivan made the sign of the cross and broke her power over him, also her blessings, so he had to get to the surface very fast and still almost died before he could warm up in his now decrepit hut. Anyway, he found his way home, and it had been a long time and it was nice to catch up and see sunlight, but he found himself missing the Ruslaka, except that now, having made that sign, he could never return to her. So yeah, if you find yourself getting some unwanted attention from the Ruslaki, the sign of the cross will get them to leave you alone forever. But only use it if you're being attacked. Or, I guess, if you want a really fast, really permanent breakup. That's it for this week. Myths and Legends is by Jason and Carissa Weiser. Our theme song is by Broke for Free, and the Creature of the Week music is by Steve Combs. There are links to even more of the music we used in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.